This is episode 306 of the Flip Empire Show.
Welcome to the Flip Empire Show, bringing you the interviews, strategies, and insights for smart real estate investors. Prepare to dive into the minds of real estate's heavy hitters and gain the cutting-edge expertise you need to scale and grow your real estate empire. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
Hey guys, I trust and hope you are doing amazing today as I bring you another masterclass with Dr. David Phelps. If you guys don't know who Dr. Phelps is, he is the owner and founder of Freedom Founders Mastermind Community over at freedomfounders.com. David is somebody that comes with a very, very interesting background. He used to own and manage a private dental practice for over 21 years. And it was around that time in the 80s where he joint ventured with his father on their first rental property. And about 3 years later, ended up selling that property, profiting very handsomely from it, and turning that, leveraging it into 31 properties that, you know, not too long after ended up producing about $15,000 net cash flow. And that was, you know, that was kind of a godsend for David, because his daughter, you know, had some health setbacks. And it caused them to leave that practice so he can spend time with her and care after her. And, you know, that's one of the benefits and one of the things about creating financial freedom is when you have cash flow, you're not dependent on your job. You're not dependent as an operator. If you're self-employed, which a lot of wholesalers and fix and flip investors are, that's why it's so important to actually create a business that supports you and your lifestyle. And it's not the other way around where you're constantly hustling and just working for your business, right? So today, David's a nationally recognized speaker on essentially creating freedom, building real businesses, which is what we're just talking about, what I was just mentioning. And he works and helps professionals like dentists take a lot of the money that they earn in their practices and create this cash flow and build wealth by connecting them to strong operators. And on today's episode, guys, it's really interesting because for the last year and a half, I've really been focused on generating more cash flow, taking a lot of the profits, a lot of the money from our wholesaling operation and putting it into cash flowing producing assets. And so often I'm asked, you know, well, I just don't have enough money to buy assets or to create this cash flow. And, you know, David flips that myth on its head, because we talked today about how you can get involved in equity participation deals if you don't have money, leveraging your unique ability, whether it's finding deals, marketing, being the connector, leveraging your resources, your network, etc. And that's really what David is an expert at, helping people and just generating that cash flow, creating that wealth. And then we kind of pivot and talk about the market, you know, and where he sees things going. What are some of the signs to look after, and how to position yourself so that you can not only survive, but so that you can thrive and prosper. So this episode is packed with nuggets, absolutely packed with nuggets. And I have no doubt you're going to walk away with a lot of really valuable information that can help you in your life and in your business. So without further ado, let's hop right into this episode. What's going on, my friends? This is Alex Pardo back with another masterclass here on the Flip Empire Show. And I am extremely humbled and honored to have my friend, Dr. David Phelps from Freedom Founders on the podcast. Dr. Phelps, how you doing, my friend?
Alex, I'm doing super. It's great to be here with you on the podcast today.
I have been looking forward to this one. You don't know this, but I've been looking forward to this one for a while. So you and I probably met, I want to say, about a year and a half ago. And I've seen so many of your presentations. We're in the same mastermind and have connected with so many people that know you. And I've just, in my interactions with you, you're someone that I've always admired and looked up to for, not just for how successful you are, but more importantly, the man you are and just, you know, how you lead by example, the leader you are. So again, I don't say it lightly when I say I'm pumped to have you on.
Well, thank you. Thank you. You know, realize that, we all go through walks in life, right? And we all learn early that we have to persevere, and there's no fast track to anything. So I've got plenty of track marks on my back. You just can't see them because I'm not going to show them to you. But let your audience know that that, you know, I've gone through a lot of ups and downs and valleys and sideways and steps backward, you know, to get there. So when we talk about people who are successful, we're really talking about people that have survived what happens in life naturally, right? Right. And we all want to have a life that, well, we can jump into a career, jump into a business that we love and passionate about. And man, we want to like kill it, crush it, right? And then stuff happens. And we have to just recognize that's just part of life, and not to take a hit or slap in the face and go back and hide in a cave, but to say, you know what? It happens to everybody. So I'm here to be as transparent as I can, you know, about what's success today and to your audience. But realize there's no fast track is being around the right people. I'll say that. But other than that, you just got to like, you know, you take your lumps, you learn, you go forward, you test some stuff, you fail some things, and it's okay. It's okay, because that's how you're going to get there.
You want to know what, David? I really appreciate your transparency and your vulnerability. That's a core value, I think, that we share. And, you know, in the age of social media, where you see so many people posting checks and just talking about the success, I think sometimes it can give people the wrong perception, right? Because nobody that has achieved any level of success, like you said, hasn't gotten there without the scars, without the tread marks on their back. And I think, I don't know about you, but I learned just as much, if not more, from the quote unquote failures or lessons learned that are inevitable in life. I mean, I've just come to realize, I'm relatively young, but the older I get, you have to enjoy the journey more than the destination and more than the goal you've set, because that's what shapes you into the person that, you know, that you're becoming and that you're destined to be. Those are my thoughts anyway. So.
Yeah, it does. It does. You know, we're set up, I think, in school, you know, from formal school at an early age, that, you know, failing, giving a wrong answer in class where you might get chided by the kids or something when you're young, right? And so we tend to pull back. Well, then failure's looked at a bad thing. You don't want to fail. And what we need to learn is to step forward and take a chance, take a risk, raise your hand. And if you get the wrong answer, it's okay, because right. The world is about what you just said. You've got to get out there. You step forward. You try things. You test. You don't fear a failure or fear a setback or something to work out, because that's how you do learn. That's how you go forward faster. Yes. Is that so? Yeah, we have to turn the whole thing around, because I can talk a lot about school, which I'm not going to do here today. But that's one of the bad things about the way our school systems are set up, right?
Yeah. Well, you want to know what? Not to go down a rabbit trail, but I am curious, selfishly and unselfishly, because I think there's a lot of parents that listen to the show. My daughter's about to be 4 years old, and I have a 2 year old, and my 4 year old is in school, and I'm talking to her about the fact of exactly what you just said, that failure is a part of life, and it's what you learn from those, but school gives you a different message, right? And so any advice for parents listening to the show, and then we're going to talk about, you know, being the bank and participation deals and all that like fun stuff. But because we've kind of gone down this road, I think it's important. There's a lot of parents listening. What are your thoughts on, you know, what we teach and communicate to our kids when they're hearing an opposite message at school or somewhere else where they might be spending a lot of time?
Right. Well, I'll try to give this in a nutshell. So my daughter's 20, almost 27. So I've been down that road, and I would do things even differently today because what I've learned, but you're exactly right. I think what we have to do is realize that, number one, you know, quality time with our kids, our family is critical. And it's so hard today because everybody's moving in 50,000 different directions. Everybody's distracted by smartphones and connectivity today. So how you run your family household about having downtime is a big part. You know, phones off the table at dinner time. Phones are not in sight, you know, so you can have conversations. Second part is, remember, your kids are watching you. Even if they're not talking about it to you, they're watching how we role model. And so remember, having conversations at the appropriate age, wherever they are, but about something that you tried, so they can see through mom and dad that, you know, mom or dad, you know, they're not afraid. They're not afraid of trying something. And you come back and say to your kids, hey, you know, I tried this thing, I tried this deal, I tried to do this thing, and it didn't work, and it's okay, because here's what I learned. I think you just got to, at the right age, right time, have appropriate conversations. Don't hide anything from your kids. Show them by your own leadership how you deal with life. I think that is one of the key things I would say.
I love it. And just to piggyback, one last point on this, and then we'll pivot into the business talk is, like you said, they're watching you, what you do, not just what you say. And I think as parents, sometimes that gets lost on us. You know, sometimes I'm playing with my daughter and I'll grab my phone really quick because a Voxer message went off and I catch myself, right? And I put it away, and I have to remember that even though she doesn't say anything, she's expecting me to like be present with her. And that's so challenging sometimes for the drivers and the type A personalities, the entrepreneurs. So anyways, I appreciate your thoughts on that, because as a new father, I'm always looking to learn from people that have just walked that road, because you don't know what you don't know, right? And I think the same applies in business. So having said that, a big portion of the audience are wholesalers and active operators. You know, wholesaling is a transactional business. I love it because it gives you, you can generate a lot of income. But one of the mistakes that I made, and I don't know if you recall this conversation, but when I think the day that you and I met, we had lunch together. And about 10, 11 years, I was so entrenched in my business. And then I look up and I'm like, I haven't generated assets that produce cash flow. And you shared some practical advice with me that has helped me. And a year later, I'm in a completely different place. Can you talk to the wholesalers out there, the fix and flip investors that are kind of in grind hustle mode and they're just chasing deals, but they don't necessarily have cash flow now and they don't have assets that they've started, you know, they haven't built up a portfolio. Let's talk to those people right now and we'll kind of go from there.
Sure. And let me make sure that they understand that what they're doing is very normal. It's, well, look, my cash flow business, my transactional business was being a dentist. All right. So we all have to put food on the table and we look at, you know, a job as a way to do that. You know, in flipping, wholesaling, you know, it's a business, but it's also no different than being a dentist or a doctor where you go to work every day and you eat what you kill. You know, I didn't kill any patients. I will be clear. I didn't kill any patients. I actually tried to fix them. But my point is, I would go to work every day and I'd get paid for providing a service. Well, that's what wholesalers and flippers do as well. You're providing a service. You're getting paid for the service, right? Great. Awesome. Bank it. You know, feed your family, buy a car, fix your house, whatever. On to the next deal. Everybody has that problem. So don't feel like you're alone. So the key thing is, yes, there's three ways to create income, really. And one is by direct labor. It's work. It's work that we do. And there's nothing wrong with work. I think just getting to the point where you're doing the right work, where you are leveraging your work and how you leverage your work through other people becomes more of a business. Now you can do wholesaling, flipping. You can create more of a business. Now we'll talk about, you know, how to create cash flow. But the big way to create cash flow is outside of a transactional business is to acquire capital assets, not financial assets, capital assets, which are in our world, it's real estate. So how does someone, you know, convert from transactional, which is the core, to also now combining that with acquiring those assets that start producing income on their own? Once you put the deal together, whatever it is, with some kind of management, you know, it still has to be managed to some degree, but correct, that asset now is going to produce regular, sustainable, predictable cash flow for the duration, as long as you hold that asset, right? And so that's where we're going with this today, I believe.
Yeah, exactly. And so what do you recommend for those that are, you know, they find that they need a certain amount of money to live on, obviously. They have to take care of their team or their taxes. Is your advice, Dr. Phelps, to take away or put aside a certain percentage off of each deal? Like, how do people start acquiring these assets when they're generating enough just to live, to take care of, you know, their expenses, their overhead? And especially where the market is today, I find so many the cost per deal continues to rise. Margins are shrinking, yes, for a lot of wholesalers and fix and flip investors. And I think that's a real pain point for people today where I constantly hear, I just don't have enough to acquire. And so maybe this is where participation deals and some of the things we're going to get into kind of come into play.
Yeah. So John D. Rockefeller, go back and Google him, look him up. But he's famous for many quotes. One of the quotes that he said was, I'd rather take, you know, 1% of a participation, a piece of 100 people's, you know, deals or businesses or whatever it is, rather, yes, than 100% of my own. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's the whole point. So if we think in terms of taking slices of a pie or slice of a deal, then the construct becomes, what piece do you bring to the table to allow you to take a piece of a deal, not have to control the whole deal? Because if we try to control the whole deal of everything, well, one, yeah, it takes a lot of stuff to do that. And so we go, well, I can't yet. I can't acquire that. I can't do that because I can't find it. I can't negotiate the deal. I can't fund it. I can't manage it. And that's really the four parts. I'll go through those again. So the anatomy of a deal is, one, someone's got to find it. So someone's got to, you know, lead generate. So if you're a great lead generator, and that's something you do really well because you market, you've got a network. Okay, you've got something of value there. It may not be money, but you've got something of value. So let's bank that one. Lead generation, finding the deal. Number two is, so you find a deal or an opportunity. Now somebody, and that could also be the same person or it could be a different person, but someone's got to negotiate the deal to close, to get a contract, right? Correct. No matter what that deal is, someone's got to be able to get the contract. And that's a skill set. And again, it could be the same person, could be a different person that does that, all right? Next, you know, there's got to be some kind of capital funding to the deal. Some cash, there could be some seller financing, there could be institutional financing, there could be private financing, but that comes in and creates the deal so it can be financed and acquired, right?
Right.
So that's number three. And then the fourth construct is the management. Somebody's got to manage the deal, whether it's a long-term, you fix a property up and you hold it long-term in a rental portfolio, you're doing a fix and flip, whatever it is, but someone's got to manage that deal either short-term or long-term to its fruition. So you've got those four pieces. Now you got to say, well, what do I do best? What do I bring to the table that somebody in the other boxes, the other quadrants would like to participate in? Well, the easy one for people that are on the street with a business that's fixing and flipping, because you're out there, you got the lead flow, you're probably at a point where you're learning, or if not, you know somebody who can put the deals together and then create the contract. Now, what do you need? And also, you probably have the ability to manage, or again, you know somebody who can manage. So, right. So all you need is the capital. That's where it comes short. Well, I don't have enough money. I'm just putting enough on the table right now to pay the bills, fund my business, and keep food on the table for my family. I don't have enough. Well, here's the deal. You got to learn how to cherry pick certain acquisitions, certain properties, certain investment opportunities, cherry pick the ones that you go, okay, this is not a good one for a wholesale deal because, and we can talk about what those are, this is not a good fix and flip because, but it could be a good long-term hold because it fits in this box. Okay, problem is, I don't got the money, I can't go get a bank loan to do this right now, I'm strung out too far. All right, what you need is you need a joint venture partner. You need the person who has the capital who's looking at you going, man, I want to get my money into real estate, but I don't have a clue how to do that. I don't want to manage. I can't find deals. I know I need this. Well, that's what we do in Freedom Founders, Alex. Just to let people know.
Yeah, please. I was going to ask you. You can talk a little bit.
Yeah, because I want people to understand this. So I want them to understand what the problem is on the other side, because we all see our world as I can do these things, but man, I'm stuck because I can't do this over here. All right, that's not a problem. You have to, instead of figuring out how to do something, you need to find the who. I'll say it again. Instead of always figuring out how to do something that's a challenge, say, well, no, I do these things well. I need a who or somebody else or another company that brings this, and now I collaborate. So what you're doing with what I do in Freedom Founders is I have a mastermind where professional practice, high-income people that are busy doing what I just said, transactional, they can make the income, right? But they are same. They got the same struggle. They can put their money on Wall Street, but most of them, a lot of them are like, I don't want to put it there anymore because that's scary. It's volatile. So I got to get my money in something that will give me some, quote, retirement money. See, they have the same problem. They can make money while they're working, but once they think about leaving practice, selling out, quitting, transitioning out, they got the same issue everybody does. Maybe at a higher level, which I think is a bigger problem, because the more income you get used to, the bigger nut you have to crack every month. They got the same issue. So I create a mastermind where they come to a mastermind, and then I connect the dots to the right kind of capital assets through other people. I don't have to go out and create the deal flow. I mean, that'd just be another big gigantic business thing I have to do. I don't want to do that. Why do I need to reinvent that wheel? Because Alex, I know people like you out of Collective Genius who already have the models in place. All I do is connect the dots. And I say, look, here's the buckets of money. You want, you got IRA money, retirement plan money, you've got tax paid money. And I show them what buckets to put things in, and it's just connecting the dots. So what people that we're talking to on your podcast today are saying, okay, so how does this work? Well, you know, you can create a network where you are tapping into people I'm talking about. Small business owners, doesn't have to be doctors or dentists, that kind of thing. It can be. But people who have businesses who understand the need to get their money working for them outside their business, mm-hmm. creating wealth. And so now you can show them easy frameworks to say, you know, here's what your money can do in a deal like X. You know, right. I can find the deal, I rehab the deal, I manage the deal, you put X money in. And realize too that most people that are still in active business mode, making money transactionally, they don't need more income today. When do they need the income? When they're going to retire. That's so right. they're great people to be in for long-term deals where front-end cash flow is not their goal. It's back-end equity, which they can then convert to cash flow. So think about it this way. A hustler on the street today probably needs more current cash flow, right? I mean, right. But they'd also like to have some equity, because that's the whole point. Cash flow, equity. So now you bring a private capital investor into your deal for a house, a property, whatever it is that you can hold because it's got the right constructs. And now they put the capital in, you manage it, you get a good chunk of cash flow, maybe not all of it, but a good chunk of it after all expenses are paid. And now they get probably a bigger piece of the back end, the equity after, you know, amortization or appreciation, right, or value add you put into it. But you still get some of that too. So now you're doing two things. You're adding to your cash flow and you're creating some of your back end same way. And you start doing some of those every quarter. And before long, now you're building out your retirement plan.
Sure. Dr. Phelps, I know you've talked, you've been involved in tons of these transactions, these the equity participation deals. Can you kind of give us a very basic how it's structured? So for people listening, where they find the deal, they connect it to the capital. Can you just kind of talk about a basic framework of how it's going, how it's going to be structured from the perspective of the wholesaler or the fix and flip investor?
Yeah, sure. Well, the easiest way to do it typically, I mean, there's two ways, but I'll start with the first one. The first one is where you, the wholesaler, the boots on the ground deal maker, you own the property. So you put it in your LLC, you title it however you title it. And then you can give the private capital investor a promissory note secured by the property. And that promissory note will have an interest carry that's going to be nominal. I mean, nominal meaning it can't be much today over about 6%, about what you might get at the banks. I mean, sure, some properties might carry a little bit more. Again, you want to have cash flow. So it could be 6%. It could be, so I'd say 6% is top. And again, you got to make sure your property cash flows. If it's a larger property in an area, then you just drop it down to 5 or 4%. Because again, your private capital investor typically is not looking for cash flow today. They're looking for down the road. So now you look at the back end, the equity piece, right? And that's going to be split up, again, according to the ratio of what you are borrowing the money at. So if I'm borrowing money at 6%, then probably I'm going to give up at least 50% of the back end equity on the deal. Again, that's general. Again, so it depends on, how much equity you are able to, quote, build into the deal on the front end. As you said earlier today, the margins are tighter today. It's harder to get those fatter equity deals, but you might find one's really solid. If you got a solid one, you can prove it to your investor, then you might be able to cut a little bit better deal where you keep a little bit more of the equity. But 6% and 50% on the back end is a good framework to start with. And then you just blend it from there, right? Blend it from there based on what the needs are, what the property, I say, well, always what does the property afford? What does the property afford to pay? What are the expectations that you, but also your investor, think the market's going to bring? I'll give you another one quick aside, and then I'll let you jump back in. Okay. So there's another member of Collective Genius that we're putting together a syndication with. This particular individual has a portfolio of already actively managed single family rental properties, a good sized portfolio, and he wants to pull equity out of it. We're doing a syndication to take a piece of that equity and cash flow above and beyond an institutional long-term lender. So we're taking an equity piece beyond that. So it's on a leveraged portfolio. Right. And this particular individual believes in his portfolio so much that he believes there's going to be relatively significant equity on the back end. I'm more like, well, I don't know. I'm not banking on that. But because he's so strong in it, it's like it's really easy for us to set up constructs where we get the cash flow that we want that still lets him cash flow his properties on the front end, but still have hurdle rates, meaning splits on the back end of this deal so that it makes sense. And he's still got, a strong, very much strong skin in the game. And that's what we love about people is when we do deals with them is that they've got a strong, they're not just a manager. Mm-hmm. They're a management company with skin in the game. They want this portfolio to stay strong. They want to see it. And then when you put people together like that, the opportunity to do deals is endless. It's just endless.
That's right. And what I'm also hearing is that it's so critical. Guys, when you go out there and you start planting seeds and building relationships with potential private capital partners, there has to be an alignment of core values. To me, I'll kind of defer to you because you've forgotten more about this than I know and you have so much more experience. But for me, I want an operator that is strong, that knows what they're doing. But I look, is there a value alignment, right? Like, do we share the same values? Is this somebody of high integrity? Because regardless of how good the operator is or how good the potential deal is, if there's not that in place, I think it's built on a house of cards. I don't know if you have any examples of, deals that maybe have gone south or just operators that looking back, you're like, maybe I should have been involved with that person, but.
No, that's a really good point. So I can, yeah, we look at it from both sides. let me take it back to like what I used to do, you know, as a dentist. And so same thing. So let's say you're going to go to a doctor or a dentist and it's first time to go to one and you walk in the front door. Well, at that point, what do you know about the core values and the operational integrity or efficiency of that dentist in office? Nothing. Unless you got a referral from somebody who said, hey, Alex, go to these people. But still you want to see congruency. So you walk in the front door and let's say you walk in the front door and there's chipped paint and there's stains on the carpet and there's a sliding glass window that's got all kinds of papers on it. And you're going, I mean, does that make you feel like really rock solid inside? You're kind of, right. Okay, well, not right. Okay. Now, same thing. When I talk to my Freedom Founders doctors, the high income people who are looking to invest in real estate, one of the key things I say is you need to learn how to do your due diligence. And part of it's what you just said. I always say, go to the site where you're going to be investing with that person. I mean, they should invite you to come down. Yes. Come down, meet my team. We'll drive you around. Let's look at some rehabs, show you the city, see where we invest. I do that on behalf of Freedom Founders, but I also recommend the doctors to also go. And when they do that, they always say that was the best money and time I spent. So if you're thinking about the same thing, you want to do the same thing for your potential investors. You want to say, hey, potential investor, as we're talking about these frameworks, I'd love to invite you to come by in the morning or in the afternoon someday and meet the team and sit in on one of our meetings, or we'll drive you around and show you some of the properties.
Yeah.
That's like showing off the dental office. So same thing. It's like, we like to show our dental office stuff. Actually, when people come to our dental office back in the day, we'd have a team member come out and greet them. It's first time to come in. And before they start filling out the paperwork and all that stuff, it's like, let me give you a quick tour through the office, Mrs. Jones, because we're proud. Come through the back door. We'll walk you through sterilization, see what's going on, because we're proud of it. See? Yeah. And so you want to do something. You want to be proud of your team, have core values that you'd exhibit. If you're not there yet and you're aspiring to get there, because again, don't worry about it. If you're thinking, man, you know, I wouldn't really want to open my door to that yet. Okay, that's okay. Because, you know, we all start at a place where we want to aspire to get better. Before you start investing other people's money, make sure you've got your culture, your team ready to open the door and show behind the curtains. When you're there and you're proud to do that, now you're ready. If you're not there yet, don't give up hope. Just get there. Get there and then do it. Yes.
I want to, this has been really, really solid information, and I appreciate your perspective. And I want to kind of slightly pivot towards, nobody has a crystal ball. And I know in the past you've spoken about, you know, prospering in a downturn, you know, the market at some point will correct itself. And I'm not asking you to predict the market, but I want to talk about the relationship between leveraging and building relationships with private capital partners and where the market is going, the importance of that, and also just your thoughts of what we need to be doing to not just survive, but thrive whenever the market does turn in whatever shape or form that actually takes place.
Yeah, well, great question. So I'll try to give you some key nuggets on that. One thing I would say is when you're working with private capital investors, I like that better than working with banks. Now, there's a place for banks for sure. If you can refinance a portfolio, long-term fixed, awesome. But here's the deal with private capital investors. They will, if you set the expectations up right, if you build a relationship and ask them what they're looking for, private capital investors will ride with you through a storm. Because, well, what else are they going to put your money? Now, it doesn't mean you can do stupid things. It doesn't mean you go out and take big risk. But for example, you need to interview a private capital investor and see what their temperature is in terms of risk tolerance. If you got a newbie first starting out, no, you want to put it in solid cash flow, rock solid. But again, they're not going to look for a big high return, right? Right. Right? You can make that. But you may have someone that you work with for a while, or someone who's been around the block, like me. Like, so Alex, you might say, hey, David, I've got a number of different investments or opportunity right now and I've got some that I'd put a little bit more in the, I don't want to use the word risk, because with real estate, we don't have to go into risk. It's just, but you might say, David, I got some that you might want to look at. And because I have an understanding of what we're talking about, we have a meeting of the minds, I might invest with you in this deal knowing that if we have a reset, it could get a little bit bumpy for a while. In other words, our exit plan may not go exactly as planned. Well, if I know that going in and we have that conversation, look, I'm going to ride with you. And you're not going to worry about me like calling you up and go, well, Alex, you know, what's happening to our deal? I thought we were going to exit this thing in 2022 and we're at the bottom of the market. You know, it's like, no, see, but when you have that relationship, you can do that. So that's one thing is to make sure that where you are using leverage, and we all use leverage. I still use leverage all the time because I think it's a big part of building a portfolio and offsetting future inflation. But yes, you've got to understand who you're leveraging with. So banks are not going to be so friendly. So make sure that you are using long-term fixed rate on cash flowing properties that you know can survive, you know, a bit of a hit, a downturn. In wherever your market is, you need to know what that looks like. You can historically go back and ask people in 2008 to 10, what did our market do cash flow wise? You know, make sure you ride through that. Because if you've got long-term fixed rate financing and you can ride through it with maybe a little dip in cash flow for a period of time, you're good as gold. You're good as gold. But if you're leveraging with short-term money, lines of credit, okay, you've got to be careful. I say never borrow short and acquire long-term, meaning you don't want to use lines of credit on long-term whole properties. You've got to get long-term financing in place because if you're tied up with short-term lending, borrowing, and we hit the skids and there's a capital call and the banks start calling in capital, doesn't matter if you're paying on or not, they'll call in capital and now you get hit. So you've got to be sure that you're not sitting on leverage in short-term. Other ways that you need to protect yourself, I think is just, again, it's easy to get caught up in the euphoria of a bull market. We've been in one for a number of years. This one's got to be on its tail end. You know, we don't know when it's going to.
I would think so. Yeah.
But odds are, if someone said, will this market, you know, continue to go up for five more years or is a chance it'll go down? Well, the odds are it's going to go down. I mean, it's just the odds, right? We're playing odds here. No one knows exactly what it is. But you've got to realize that there's every market right now, you know, there's a topping out. You know, so where are you in your market, right? And again, if you've got the right financing in place with people that are flexible and get it, so that you know if you are at a peak and you need to go to a plan B with a property you thought you were going to retail out, and all of a sudden, boom, we can't. We got to go to plan B. Plan B means we're going to rent this thing. And plan B means renting it for 2 or 3 years. Do you have financing in place that'll let you do that? If you do, you're good. If you don't, then you may be taking some hits. So those are the key things, I think, and just giving people some constructs is don't get caught up in the euphoria. Don't keep pressing it where your margins are getting tighter and tighter and tighter, where you're banking on the fact that this market will keep going, because it's not. It's gonna stop and sputter out at some point.
Yeah. What's your expectation? Like I said, nobody has a crystal ball, but just from some of the signs that you've been seeing or what you expect to happen, what do you think it looks like? And I know that that's a popular conversation amongst a lot of our circles. Is it going to look like 2008? Nothing like it. Is it going to be worse? And there's different schools of thought when it comes to that. What's your opinion? And then what are some of the signs that you look for that you would advise people to kind of keep their eye out?
Yeah, well, if your boots on the ground out there or you're part of other groups like you know, we are in Collective Genius, that's a great place to understand what's going on because we can quickly see in different markets what's happening, what markets are softening up. We get that lead. Miami, Southern California, what's happening to higher end price properties. All these same signals were there back in before 2008. It's just people don't look at them. They just basically turn the other way and go, no, it's not going to happen. So you have to look at what's happening in different markets. Certainly your own, just to be prepared.
Yeah.
What do I think is going to happen? You know, it's every time is different, and I think that the big unique factor this time is that we've got so much more debt loaded up all across the board. I mean, our country, you know, is doubled the debt. We're up to $22 trillion now when we were back at 10. So we've doubled that. And a lot of people go, well, that doesn't seem to bother anything. Look, it's a smoking bomb, right? And if we double it, there's student loan debt, auto debt. There's just we're riding on so much debt, and that's a trigger point. So it's hard to say, Alex, because again, we don't know how much, you know, our country still being the reserve currency, the Federal Reserve can still play the games that they did back in 2008. I think they're more restricted now in what they can do. I think they don't have as much leverage points to move things. So I just say, you know, if we went back in whatever market you're in, if you had another 2008, whatever that looked like in your market, I would go back and say, am I stress tested for that? I'm not going to go deeper than that. I mean, if things get worse than that, Alex, I think we're in bigger trouble. This is going to be a bigger reset. So I don't try to go that far. But I say, you know, could I stress test again my portfolio right now back to 2008 again? And that's how I look at it.
Okay. And I know your answer to this question, David, is going to vary depending on who you're speaking to and the season they are in their life. But generally speaking, are you advising people to just right now be in a strong cash position? Like, what are some of the tips or advice you would share if you were having lunch with generally speaking, right? Again, it depends on where the person is at their life, but just what's some of the wisdom you can kind of pass along having been through multiple real estate cycles based on where we are now?
Yeah, well, you know, cash and cash flow are king. So if you've got, if you do have cash or access to cash again could be private capital lenders who, I look at this way. I've got a portfolio of a lot of equity, right? But I've got people who, if I want to get money out of that property for various reasons, I could secure, notes and options and all kinds of things. I could get equity. So I've got access to capital. I don't have to go to the banks because when things turn, I don't have to look to the banks. Even if I got a great credit score, the banks, they kind of shut down at some point. Doesn't matter what your credit score is. It's like, sorry, we're not lending today. So I've got to have cash if I can, or access to cash. The two are almost synonymous. You got good access to private capital, you're good. But again, you've got to have something that private capital wants. So I'm ready to give up, equity and property. I'm ready to give up some cash flow and some stuff if I can get access to cash to carry me through the gap. The gap meaning it's going to be like 18 months of a gap where things just kind of shut down and properties aren't selling and cash flows are down. I got to get through that gap. I don't want to, as I said, I don't want to be leveraged up with short-term financing because again, where are you going to refinance out? The banks stop. So you got to have access to refinance properties that have short-term lending. Try to get that stuff put away now. I would say also, look at debts you have. Look at debts that you might work to pay off now that would free up more cash flow, right? Short-term. So if you've got debts you could pay off in the next 6 months or 12 months without, killing your business, of course. But would free up bigger chunks of cash flow. Look at those, kind of triage your debts. I'm not telling young people you got to kill it all off. You can't, but just being strategic about the assets you have, that are, cash flowing or building equity. And then also being strategic about the debt that you have, because you have to use debt, but being strategic about what kind you have. And if you've got bad debt or bad assets, now's a great time to be cleaning that stuff up. Get rid of assets that are not good, that are potentially, could be harmful in a downturn. Get rid of that stuff, whatever you have to do, and then start killing off some bad debt, either refinancing it or paying it off if you can.
Correct. I think the last point I'll add to this conversation, and then we can start to wind down the show to put a bow on it, is, as wholesalers and fix and flip investors, guys, also look at your overhead. Try to be more profitable and more lean, and sometimes those are not related. Sometimes as we try to grow revenue and profit, we take on significantly more overhead. And by the way, I'm speaking to myself as much as I'm, speaking to you guys as well. I mean, it's a mistake I've made, and we're starting to look now at the overhead and saying, is this really necessary? And that's one way to free up cash flow. And I know you would agree, David.
Yeah, that's I'm glad you brought that up because you're absolutely right. I think every business, and we're talking about people that have businesses, is, there's this idea that, I can grow and we can grow. We've grown the last several years and we can keep growing. And yes, you can, but there's a point because here's the problem. Growth sucks cash. It takes it in. It eats growth, eats cash, and eats cash flow. So there's a time to grow and be aggressive. I think now's not a time to be aggressive. I think now's the time, as you just said, look at your costs, look at your overhead, see where you could start, like maybe cutting back or getting more out of what you've got, and your people, your systems, your everything you've got. See where you can get more out of it. You've got to be nimble and don't be running high right now, because if the market turns, it turns and it can cut fast, and you want to be in a place where you can adjust and be nimble enough to ride through those corrections.
Yeah, totally agree with you. Last couple of questions I want to lob your way, and then we're going to wind it out here. This is a question I always ask guests that come on the show, and I never prep them for it. Rewind the clock 20, 25 years. What's the one piece of advice you would share with the younger Dr. David Phelps? And this could be about business or it could be about life. And I realize that's a very general question, but if you had to boil it down, distill it to one piece of advice, what would that be and why?
Don't live your life by other people's agendas. Mm. What I mean by that is society, parents, teachers, social media, maybe your industry, people around you that are like crushing it, killing it, telling you, you have to determine what you want in your life. And I stayed in a certain pathway longer than I should have because it was what, Alex? It was safe. Why was it safe?
Comfortable.
Because I knew it. Was it comfortable? Yeah. Was it giving me everything I wanted in life? No. Was I making a living, putting food on the table? Yes. But we all know there's more to life than that. And so I would just say, don't let other people, turn it around, say it this way. You need to own your own agenda, because if you don't, someone else will put theirs in front of you.
Yeah, that's powerful. That's powerful. Yep. I dropped the mic right there. Nothing else to say. I think that's a perfect way to wrap the show. How can we help you? How can we add value? Where can people connect with you, find out more about Freedom Founders or anything else you might be having, going on?
Well, sure. People can. I do a lot of blogs and I do a podcast as well, which some of your people might be interested in. Again, it's for professional people, but I talk about, I got plenty on there about finance and real estate. So they might like to hear that side of the conversation. The Dennis Freedom Blueprint Podcast. They can tap in and look for ones that might be relevant. I don't talk about drilling teeth. So don't worry about that.
All right. Perfect. We'll make sure to include a link in the show notes page to iTunes and to the site as well. So
yeah, awesome. Freedomfounders.com is the website. And again, I do quite a few blogs and videos. So if people want to connect there and see what I put out, I try to make it interesting and vary it.
I love it. Well, listen, as we wrap up here, I want to recognize you, acknowledge you for everything you've done for our community, for the industry. Like I said, leading by example, I've learned a lot from you, whether you know it or not, in the last year. I appreciate the advice you gave me over lunch. And like I said, it was an honor to have you on the show. And hopefully people take at least a couple of nuggets of the many things you shared and they implement, right? Because speed of implementation, I think, is really what separates those that succeed from those that just kind of squander and struggle day to day. So thank you.
Alex, thank you. It's been a real pleasure and honor to be with you today.
Awesome. Well, guys, I look forward to connecting with you on the next show and have an awesome day.
That's all for this episode of the Flip Empire Show. But we have you covered with even more expertise and resources on our website. Text EMPIRE to 67076 or head over to flipempire.com to join the newsletter and gain free instant access to our video module training course called 5 Ways to Scale Your Real Estate Wholesaling Business to 6 Figures in 6 Months or Less. For more interviews, strategies, and insights for the smart real estate investor, we'll catch you next time here on the Flip Empire Show.